and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Hello, hello. It is February 4th, 2021, and it is 1902 UTC. I'm your host, and it's time to get started. Thanks for tuning in. Tomorrow will be a recorded show, fingers crossed. If I wake up early enough, I'll get it recorded on time and won't have to stress. And then that will play right on the dot at 1900 UTC. But when it's live, I'm usually a couple minutes or a minute or so behind because I'm working, and then I have to change rooms and change gears and all that jazz. So anyway, if you're new to the show, that's what's up, and that's why it's like always starts a couple minutes, but not consistently at 1900. All right. Well, I also want to be sure and invite you to COM. That is the chat program with SDF. So all you do is type COM at the prompt, and then press G for go to, and type anon radio, and then hit enter. And then boom, there you are. And then you can say hi and get shoutouts. Like, hello, BNR, how are you? 3-character username gang in the house. Big shout out to everyone else in the anon radio room, including Dusted, Jazmez, W. Visser, Tobe, JWH, Publius, Ratsu, Sin is here. Man, it's a full house. This is good times. Thanks so much for tuning in. Well, we're going to start up the way we always do, the same fun blender.
World news. World news.
Let's get the world news whirling. So, here we go. Starting up, we're in Africa today. A former child soldier and LRA, that's Lima Romeo Alpha commander in Uganda, convicted of war crimes at the International Criminal Court. Former Ugandan child soldier, who became a commander of the rebel Lord's Resistance Army, was convicted on Thursday of dozens of crimes, including widespread rape, sexual enslavement, child abductions, torture, and murder, including killing of babies. Dominic Ongwen was found guilty by the International Criminal Court of 61 out of 70 alleged accounts of war crimes and crimes against humanity. A hearing in mid-April will consider a possible sentence, which could be up to life imprisonment, with the decision expected later this year. Judges at the court said Ongwen, who himself was taken by the LRA as a young boy, had acted out of free will in committing innumerable crimes between 2002 and 2005, commanding several hundred soldiers. Welcome, X1. Howdy, howdy. And Ali Ark in the comm. All right. Welcome. Mothers were forced to abandon their children in the bush. LRA fighters threw children, including babies, into the bush because the children were crying and making it difficult for their mothers to carry looted goods. Presiding Judge Bertram Schmidt said, naming the victims and describing the crimes, his guilt has been established beyond any reasonable doubt. Ongwen, wearing a tie and a face mask, sat impassively in court, sometimes with his eyes closed, listening as the judgment was read out. In a legal first, Ongwen was also convicted for the crime of forced pregnancy, for atrocities committed against 7 women as a result of the sexual and physical violence and the living conditions to which they were submitted. The abducted women and girls suffered severe, barely imaginable physical and mental pain. Ongwen ordered the killing and abduction of many civilians during attacks on camps protected by Ugandan government forces, and personally took 6 ice-raped women and forced children to fight in hostilities, the court found. Wow. This guy is just a bad, bad dude. It's just amazing. I'm glad that he's no longer terrorizing Uganda. It's just wild. It is noted that Ongwen's superior officer, LRA head Joseph Kony, has evaded justice for more than 15 years and called on countries to help secure his arrest and transfer to The Hague for trial. Some of you may remember. Oh, welcome, BNR. Some people may remember, or welcome back, I should say, may remember a few years ago, there was a big meme about trying, like, Kony for president, and people thought it was very funny. But, yeah, this is the kind of stuff that the LRA is all about. So, anyway, serious business. All right. Now, I've I've recently learned that I say the name of the country Myanmar wrong, but I don't know how to say it right. So anyway, I'm sorry if anybody's from there or is offended by how I say it. But this comes to us from that country. Well, there have been a few public demonstrations since Myanmar's military coup on February 1st. The country's citizens have found ways to take action from home, organizing acts of civil disobedience and online resistance to protest the takeover. The army seized power in an unnervingly smooth coup. It has since detained head of government Aung San Suu Kyi and other democratically elected leaders, declared a state of emergency, and imposed a partial internet blackout. The coup occurred the day that a new session of parliament was set to approve the National League for Democracy government, or NLD, that won re-election in November, led by head of government Aung San Suu Kyi. She and other leaders in the NLD, including President Win Myint, were arrested in early morning raids and detained in undisclosed locations. Oh, wow. Publius here, coming in with some cool info in comm. Both Burma and Myanmar are alternative ways of transliterating the exact same word into Roman letters, and that's how difficult Burmese is to pronounce for Westerners. Wow, that's pretty cool. Tobe loves the script. Hell yeah. Alrighty, let's keep on moving. France 24's English channel spoke with Brenda, which is not a real name, an activist in Myanmar, about her experience of the coup and the resistance movement developing on the ground. Not everyone realized that there was a coup happening. Monday morning, everything seemed normal outside. Not everyone realized that there was a coup happening, but the military cut off telecommunications at around 6 a.m., so he could not communicate with anyone. I think they're trying to make the coup as normalized as possible, but we're all scared of what will happen next because we've already experienced it before. Editor's note, this is from France 24, by the way. Editor's note, the military seized power in 1962, leading to 26 years of military rule. They cut off electricity and arrest people at night. That night I couldn't even sleep. So, so that's what's going on. There's lots of reports coming in and out of the country, so at least it's not quite like a, it's not like a North Korea situation, at least not yet. Boop, boop, boop. All right, and let's keep on going. Here is basically an assassination story. Lachman Slim, a prominent Lebanese Shiite publisher who criticized Iran-backed Hezbollah, was found shot dead in a car in southern Lebanon on Thursday, two security sources and his family said. A judge following the case said the body of Lachman Slim had four bullets in the head and one in the back, in the first such killing of a known activist in years. One of the security sources also said Slim, who ran a research center and made films, was shot in the head. The second said Slim's phone was found earlier on the side of the road. He said the motive was not immediately clear. Slim is in his 50s, was a leading Shiite voice who spoke against what he saw as Hezbollah's intimidation tactics and accused them of intolerance of other political views. He was last seen after leaving the house of a poet friend on Wednesday night. His family said he went missing overnight. His wife tweeted he was not answering his phone. A relative said they found out about his death from a news alert while at a police station to report his disappearance. Lebanon's caretaker interior minister told local media Slim died in a terrifying crime and pledged to pursue the case, which he called an assassination. So, we'll see what happens here. Closing quote here, his murder is a very big loss for Lebanon, for culture, Azim Siki, a well-known Lebanese journalist, said. He was one of the few who only knew how to speak his mind. So this is comes to us from France 24 with some help from Reuters. And speaking of Reuters, this story comes from them. EU watchdogs may step in as retail shares trade skyrocket. What? More volatility in the markets? How can we handle this? What will we do? You gotta hold your stocks. Yeah, definitely. European Union regulators may intervene after a surge in online share trading by retail investors since restrictions to tackle the COVID-19 pandemic were introduced, the bloc security watchdog said on Thursday. Regulators have sifted through market transactions to find the source of the surge, which began long before last week's frenzy bailout of retail trading on Wall Street drew the attention of U.S. authorities. We're closely monitoring these new developments and are assessing whether any further supervisory actions are needed, Stephen Major, chair of the European Securities and Markets Authority, told an A4 consulting webinar. So far, the data has showed that retail investors' buying of blue chips in France rose fourfold last month, while overall volumes tripled. Figures from Belgium's regulator suggested that growth in investing was concentrated among young investors. Equally concerning is that they may have turned to day trading to fill their time during lockdowns. The large price bubble in Bitcoin in the second half of 2020 was also a concern, but it's hard to say if it was linked to increasing trading in more traditional financial instruments like shares. We'll remain vigilant in monitoring developments. So, I think this is interesting. I've got a few different thoughts about it, but the big one is that I think that if we can, a lot of the younger generations have gone to school, gotten degrees, but then not found them. They don't have jobs or ways to build wealth, and it's very frustrating and terrible for them. And so, maybe day trading or these kind of markets will be an out. I don't know. It almost feels like trade schools could be a big boom. You know, blue collar work could make a big comeback. But anyway, that's just a random thought on my end. We are about almost halfway through, and we're almost done with the world news, but we've got a few more to go. So hang in there. Thanks for listening. We'll play a song in just a few, because this little guy...
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
Yeah, this guy, he pops in my head sometimes, and I'm just like, all right already. Oh, Calm is fun. Calm is always fun to interact with. But if you're listening to this on a rerun, sorry. Yeah, this is a rerun. Today's February 4th, 2021. All right, let's do this. In first for Europe, Belgium sentences Iranian diplomat for 20 years over Paris bomb plot. And we've got coverage of this from France 24 and Al Jazeera. From France 24... We've got Belgian prosecution lawyers and civil parties to the prosecution said Vienna-based diplomat Assadollah Assadi was guilty of attempted terrorism after a plot to bomb a rally of the National Council of Resistance of Iran, which is NCRI, near Paris in June 2018 was foiled by German, French, and Belgian police. The ruling shows two things. A diplomat doesn't have immunity for criminal acts and the responsibility of the Iranian state in what could have been carnage. Belgian prosecution lawyer George-Henri Bouthier told reporters outside the court in Antwerp. Reporters and members of the public were not allowed in the courtroom, which was heavily guarded by police and armored vehicles with police helicopters overhead. Three other Iranians were sentenced in the trial for their role as accomplices, with 15, 17, and 18-year sentences handed down respectively. If we jump over to Al Jazeera to get their take, we've got here... is the ruling marked the first trial of an Iranian official for suspected terrorism in the European Union since Iran's revolution in 1979. The court sentenced Assadi to 20 years in prison on Thursday in the first trial of an Iranian official for suspected terrorism in Europe since Iran's 1979 revolution. Iran's foreign ministry strongly condemned the ruling, repeating its previous stance that it believes Assadi's arrest and prosecution are illegal and violate the 1961 Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations. Saeed Khatibzadeh, the foreign ministry spokesman, said Belgium and other countries involved in the case have been influenced by the MEK, like Michael Echo Kilo. I do not know what that stands for. Let's see if it's in the article somewhere that I missed. It's mentioned at the other end of the article. MEK is Mujahideen El Khalq. Which is a it was former members of another party which formed with the aim of regime change in Iran. So they're saying it was informed by that. So there you go. Boop do 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 do. Oh yeah. So that's kind of new. That's a little bit surprising. Hopefully diplomats stay safe. But hey, welcome Pimple. Thanks for tuning in. All right, Well, it's time for a song real quick, because we're halfway through the show. It's 1917. It'll be 1918 by the time we get the music going, I betcha. But that's all good. We're all having a good time. And, you know, that's what we can. That's all we can ask for. Let's see what we got here. All right. All right. We're going to play about 2 or 3 minutes of a song that's much too long, but it's much too good to blow off. So, I hope you like it. Oh, here we go. Even better. This is It Rolling Bob, a reggae tribute to Bob Dylan.
How many roads must a man walk down before you can call him a man? How many seas must a white dove see before she can sleep in the sand? How many times can a cannonball fly before they're forever banging? Oh, the answer, my friend, it is blowing in the wind. Oh, the answer is blowing in the wind. How many years can a mountain exist before it is washed to the sea? Oh, yes, how many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free? Yes, how many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see? Yo, oh, the answer, my friend, it is blowing in the wind. Oh, the answer is blowing in the wind. Man, look up before he can see the sky. Yes, how many years must one man have before he can hear people cry?
You're listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF Public Access Unix System.
Oh, yeah, 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 that's right, everybody. How many? Sorry, I'm enjoying my time here today. That was Don Carlos and a reggae tribute to Bob Dylan, and that was most of the song, Blowing in the Wind. So, anyway, pretty cool. I thought it was cool. All right, well, let's go and get on back in with the news. It is time. Oh, I forgot to say.
You're listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF Public Access Unix System.
And we want to thank SDF for hosting Anon Radio, and thank you guys for listening. You can catch Tobe and the Dubious Goals Committee right at the bottom of the hour at 1930 UTC every single day. And most days, except for Tuesdays, I think, you can catch somebody after Tobe. So it's definitely worth just plugging in Anon Radio into your player or whatever music listening device you've got and letting it roll. All right, let's keep on going. We've got to go into our tech news.
It's time for tech news.
Oh, yeah. Here we go. First up, Dogecoin's in the news again. Excuse me. Prince of Dogecoin. That's a great... I think Elon Musk might be the Prince of Dogecoin. Dogecoin rose by 50% following Elon Musk tweet price of Dogecoin, a cryptocurrency, soared after Elon Musk underlined his power as a market tipster by tweeting about it. It rose by 50% on February 4th, shortly after Musk, the chief executive of Tesla and the world's richest person, tweeted that Dogecoin is the people's crypto. No highs, no lows, only Doge, he added. He also tweeted a meme featuring himself and Dogecoin in Disney's The Lion King. It's worth pointing out that Dogecoin is a meme cryptocurrency and has built-in inflation and is incredibly easy to mine, so its value is almost always at 0.001 or 0.00001 of a penny. So you can buy like 1,000 of them for a dollar or something like that. It's a ridiculous cryptocurrency, but it is. It was made to kind of show how people will buy anything. So it's like a troll. It's a trolling cryptocurrency, basically. But if you get in on it, you can actually make money off of people who are buying it. So I would just tell you this: if you have a couple hundred bucks you want to waste, wait until Dogecoin is like a couple of pennies, and buy some, and then set up a limit order for whenever set up a limit order and just hope somebody buys it for 5 cents or 10 cents each. Anyway, that's just my opinion, but I just thought it was very funny that Dogecoin, just mentioning it, all he has to do is talk about it. And I guess if you're the richest man in the world, it might be fun to like manipulate markets just by talking about things, but yeah. I don't know. I just can't imagine the unbelievable power to just be like, you know what? I'm gonna hype up a cryptocurrency and then watch everybody lose their shirts. Yep. Post modern world. You could call it a post Malone world, or you could also call it a late stage capitalism show. Let's keep on moving. All right, we've got a couple of U.S.-based stories now. Off-road, off-grid, the modern nomads wandering America's backcountry. The Guardian has a great lifestyle piece today about people who are living in the van. It's also a popular hashtag, van life. But basically, what you see is more and more Americans are living in vehicles than ever before. It was never their plan, though. I wasn't prepared when I had to move into my SUV. The transmission was going. I had no money saved. I was really scared, said April Craren, 52, bundled in blankets. God, why am I so clogged up? Sorry about that. I can only assume that there's allergens in the air. Well, anyway, so lots of Americans are living out of their cars. Because they can't afford to do anything else. If the Great Recession was a crack in the system, COVID and climate change will be the chasm, says Bob Wells, 65, the nomad who plays himself in the film Nomadland, an early Oscar contender starring Frances McDormand. Bob helped April to adopt the nomad way of life and change her life in the process. Today he lives exclusively on public lands in his GMC Savannah, fitted with 400 watts of solar power and a 12-volt refrigerator. His life mission is to promote nomadic tribalism in a car, van, or RV as a way to prevent homelessness and live more sustainably. So, it's very interesting. Like I said, it's a long piece, but it's promoting that kind of nomadic listening life. So, I guess you'd call it post-McDonald life. Now, we talked about stonks earlier and Dogecoin. Janet Yellen, who's the U.S. Treasury Secretary, said today that she and financial market regulators need to understand deeply what happened in the recent trading frenzy involving GameStop and other retail stocks before taking any action. Yellen is convening a meeting of top market regulators today, is what she said on Good Morning America. We really need to make sure that our financial markets are functioning properly, efficiently, and that investors are protected. In her first media interview since she became the first female U.S. Treasury Secretary last week, Yellen also argued that a massive federal stimulus plan was needed to overcome the economic pain caused by the coronavirus pandemic, which has left millions of Americans jobless. We never had anything so large, even during the Great Recession. We need to make sure people have jobs. If they don't have jobs, that they're supported. So she added that President Joe Biden still wanted Congress to pass his $1.9 trillion stimulus plan on bipartisan basis and is looking to cooperate. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, who knows what regulations will come out and whether they'll be enforced. Yeah, it's always a mystery, right? Okay, let's go ahead here. All right. Exclusive. Indigenous Americans dying from COVID at twice the rate of white Americans. Yeah, minorities in the United States die at higher rates than most other than whites in America, I guess you could say. Often it's racism or systemic racism or some other kind of abuse like that. But The Guardian has a piece about indigenous people, and basically what we've got is Native Americans are dying at a faster rate than any other community in the U.S. American Indians and Alaskan Natives are dying at almost twice the rate of white Americans, according to an analysis by APM, that's Alpha Papa Mike Research Lab, shared exclusively with The Guardian. Nationwide, one in every 475 Native Americans have died from COVID since the start of the pandemic, compared to one in every 825 white Americans, one in every 645 black Americans. Native Americans have suffered 211 deaths per 100,000, compared to with 121 white Americans per 100,000. The true death toll is undoubtedly significantly higher, as multiple states and cities provide patchy or no data on Native Americans lost to COVID. Of those that do, communities in Mississippi, New Mexico, Arizona, Montana, Wyoming, and the Dakotas have been the hardest hit. And then they have a chart showing just what the death rates are. It's pretty interesting. They have a map. And yeah, just in general, if you go to The Guardian, you can read more about it. But just be aware, it's really bad out there, and things don't look good in the U.S. for any group, but especially minority groups. Oh, shucks. We're out of time. The U.S. finally acknowledged India's farmer protests, and...
Well, that sounds means that our time's come to an end.
A cop actually got charged
with
murder.
Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow, and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.
Thanks for listening. Bye! Listen to the Dubious Goals Committee. You do it!
7.